Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy on KFI is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my KFI podcast. This show originally aired on Saturday, December 30th, 2006, on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. This is show 313.
Saturday, December 30th.
60 in Marina Del Rey, it is 65 in Encino. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour on the half and when it breaks. At 11:05, I'm Ginger Chan, KFI News.
Thank you, Ginger, and good morning to you, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Wrapping up 2006. Getting ready for 2007. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. 1-800-520-1534. Now, let me say, we're not talking politics here. We're not talking about news. We're talking about technology. I get it, but although there's plenty of politics in tech, and there's plenty of news. In fact, nowadays, I think more and more people are getting their news from the internet. Certainly network ratings are going down and sites like Dig are going up, up, up. People go online to find out what's hot. They go to YouTube to see the video. It's really kind of an amazing shift. This was the year that change really began. We're going to talk today and tomorrow about the year in review, of course, but also what's ahead for 2007. I'm not very good at predictions, I have to confess. It's one thing to, you know, predict that the Raiders are going to win the Super Bowl or not. I guess that's a safe prediction, not. But it's a little harder to predict what's going to happen in tech because, frankly, stuff changes so fast and there are so many discontinuities. It's not a logical, linear, uphill, straight line progression from here to there. There's things happen that are unexpected that change everything and often are very hard to predict. 2007 is going to be full of stuff like that. If you thought 2006 was a wild ride, get ready. We'll talk more about 2007 tomorrow. Let's make tomorrow, since it is New Year's Eve, the 2007 show. We'll make this the 2006 show. I'd love to hear what you thought the big stories were. I have a couple of ideas. 1-800-520-1KFI. That's my phone number if you'd like to pitch in. I can talk about anything, of course. In fact, in general, I'll start this show and raise a few issues, and always, and almost inevitably, what people really want to know is, how do I get the spyware off my computer? Should I upgrade to Vista? Should I buy a Mac or a PC? That's fine. I'll talk about all of that. Internet, MP3 players, getting your iPod tuned up. Did you get one for the holidays? Get a Christmas iPod? You got some questions about that, or any gadget you got? GPS, cell phones. At some point, I'll talk about cell phones. I was in Mexico the last week, and while my phones worked, calls came in. I couldn't make outbound calls, and it really made me think about what to do if you're traveling. And I've actually come up with, I think, the best way to do it. We'll talk about that at some point. But today is really the year-in-review show. And what a year it was. This was the year, as I said to Bill a few minutes ago, this was the year that acquisitions took the front page. Big acquisitions. You know, it's funny. If you look back at the beginning of the year, 2006, YouTube just was kind of getting started. It was about, I think it started in September 2005. So it was about 3 or 4 months old at the beginning of this year. And it really wasn't on the map. I don't think people really were aware of YouTube until Lazy Sunday. You remember that? That was the Saturday Night Live sketch. That I should play a little bit of it because that'll bring it back to you. Let me get my Mac online here. That was a Saturday Night Live sketch that made fun of the Chronicles of Narnia. It was a kind of a rap song. And people saw it on YouTube, loved it on YouTube, of course. But let me see.
Lazy Sunday, wake up in the late afternoon. Call Parnell just to see how he's doing. Hello, what up, Parn?
Yo, Sandberg, what's cracking?
You thinking what I'm thinking?
Party up!
Man, it's happening.
Converse my hunger pains, I'm sticking like duct tape.
Just hit up Magnolia and Mac on some cupcakes.
No doubt that bakery's got all my Bob Frosty.
I love those cupcakes like McAdams loves Gosling.
Gosling,
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 Gosling. No, six.
No, 12.
Baker Cousin. I told you that I'm crazy for these cupcakes, cousin.
Yo, where's the movie playing?
Dude.
Well, let's hit up Yahoo Maps to find the dopest route.
I prefer MapQuest.
That's a good one, too.
Google
Maps
really.
Is the best.
True that.
Double true.
Fully
68 to Broadway.
Step on it, sucker.
What you want to do, Chris?
Sack attack, motherfucker. The Chronic. What pulls of Narnia?
Yes, the Yo, Chronic. What pulls of Narnia? Narnia.
Chronic. What pulls of Narnia? Now, I think that, you know, the way this happened is, of course, a lot of people picked it up, put it on YouTube, where it became one of the most watched videos of all on YouTube. I mean, huge on YouTube. Probably hundreds of millions of downloads on YouTube. And NBC hit the ceiling. They said, wait a minute. You can't. You're stealing. They're watching you instead of us. In probably one of the most boneheaded maneuvers of a television network ever in recorded history, and there have been many, this was one of the worst. Because what was the real upshot of it? People started watching Saturday Night Live again. They said, oh, the show's funny again. Haven't watched that in years. That's funny. So NBC, I think, learned. I mean, they made deals with YouTube, and they started putting stuff up there. And you can see Lazy Sunday, and you can see about 800. If you type Lazy Sunday to YouTube, YOUTUBE.com. You'll find 100 spoofs. Lazy Monday. Just great stuff. People redoing it. And it took a little while, but I think NBC suddenly said, there's something going on here. This could be valuable. But meanwhile, I think we were all worried that YouTube was going to get sued out of existence. I remember interviewing the YouTube founders, Steve Chen and Chad Hurley in March of 2006. And the question was, there were two questions. One, can you survive the lawsuits, the inevitable lawsuits you're going to get? And two, how are you going to pay for the bandwidth? Because even in March, they were already spending more than $1 million a month in bandwidth. And I really have to credit these guys because I think they deserve their success because a lot of guys would have folded, would have crumbled, would have said, oh, we're in deep trouble here. We got every record company, every network, every movie company mad at us. What are we going to do? But no, they saw the potential. And about 8 months, 6 months later, was it September, October? Along comes Google, proffers $1.8 billion. By the way, it's now well over $2 billion. Because a lot of it was stock. $2 billion for this company that's barely a year old. Not bad. Wasn't the only big acquisition of 2006, of course. MySpace is purchased by Rupert Murdoch for $500 million. And Murdoch says, whoa, you know what? I got a deal. This is worth a lot more than I thought. Google actually made more than just that acquisition. They bought Writely. They announced a calendar. They announced a spreadsheet. Essentially, Google created an office, an online office. And I think if you're going to make some predictions, and I will tomorrow, I think the outlines of where Google is going is starting to become clear. And yes, it does involve global domination. AOL tried to survive 2006 by going first by raising the prices of the dial-up through the roof. Firing a bunch of executives and then saying, we're free. We're free over here. Hello. Remember us? We're free now. I don't know if that's going to save the company. Most observers think they'll be acquired in 2007. That's over really for AOL. But people have been saying, including me, I've been writing off AOL for decades. It seems certainly since the 90s. Let's see, what other big stories? Well, there was the options scandal, which is still an ongoing story. In fact, just yesterday, Apple announced the results of its internal investigation saying, oh, Steve Jobs didn't have anything to do with it. Well, he did suggest, quote, favorable options dating. But no, he didn't have anything to do with the backdating, no. This is one of those stories. It's more a Wall Street Journal story probably than a story for KFI, but it has had some impact on tech companies. CNET's CEO had to resign. A number of other companies, people resigned. Fred Anderson, the CFO of Apple, left. Essentially, what happens is the compensation for a lot of executives at these companies are stock options. Stock option is an option to buy at a particular price, and you don't have to buy. You can hold on to it, and if the stock price goes up, you make money. It's actually a great idea for compensation. It basically gives the executive a stake in the success of the company. So it makes perfect sense. If the company gets, you know, gets more valuable, you make more money. Eh, one little problem, though. Normally, when you give these options, you give, there's something called a strike date. That is the date of the gift of the options. You write that date down and you say, what's the stock price today? Okay, that's the value of the option. Our stock price is $5 today? Great. Okay, good. So that means you can buy 1 million shares at $5 for the next, you know, few years. And if the stock price goes to $15, well, hey, you made $10 a share. If it goes down, you didn't make any money, but you didn't lose any money because you didn't have to buy the options, right? Well, here's what the backdating does. Is they look back to a previous date, long before the gift date, to the low stock price. $5 today, but guess what? It was only $2 6 months ago. Let's date those options. Let's say we gave them to you 6 months ago. That way you've made instantly a $3 a share paper profit. That's the scandal in a nutshell. And it's really, it's hurt the industry. It's hurt a lot of companies, but the tech industry in particular. Had it forced Steve Jobs out at Apple, I think it would have been a huge, huge problem for Apple. Steve Jobs is the company, isn't he? Is Bill Gates Microsoft? He announced this year that he is leaving in 2008. The world's longest resignation. He's going to step down. Everybody's asking, how important is Bill Gates to Microsoft? Is he, like Steve Jobs, the company, or does Microsoft go on just fine without him? I'm of the opinion Microsoft's been kind of doing without Bill Gates for some time now. He's been very busy with his charitable efforts. I don't think he's been as closely involved in the management of the company, which might explain why Vista took 5 years to get out and why all these security issues. Maybe not. I mean, there are many insiders who say, oh, no, Bill's a micromanager. He's just as hands-on as he ever was. We'll find out in 2008. This was the year Vista finally kind of sort of came out. Well, it will in a month, exactly a month from today. The PS3 kind of sort of came out, if you could get in line and wait long enough to buy one or maybe spend thousands on eBay. The Nintendo Wii really took the world by storm this year. Nintendo kind of rising from the dead. If you'd asked me at the beginning of the year, you know, what's Nintendo's future, I'd say, well, the DS is doing well. We like the DS, but boy, they're just out of the console gaming market. Mm-mm, wrong. HP had that big scandal where the chairwoman of the board, Patricia Dunn, had to resign because she'd spied on other members of the board and the press using illegal techniques to find out what they were up to. She was looking for a leak, kind of a Nixonian scandal. Google entered the dictionary as a verb, lowercase g. To Google someone is to, well, Google them. I don't think I have to explain it, do I? Look them up on the internet. And podcast became a word in the dictionary, maybe prematurely. As much as I love podcasting, I think the jury's still out whether podcasting has legs. I'm putting a lot of my eggs in that basket, but podcasting seems to have stalled a little bit. Blogging didn't. Blogging's big. And bloggers wielded even more weight this year, including, of course, in the courts, where one blogger, Joshua Wolf, was put in jail and is still in jail for not releasing videotape he had of a protest in San Francisco. What's your big story of 2006? Let's talk about it. 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
KFI News.
Fox News.
Together, bringing you the big stories.
KFI AM 640.
1125 KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. Our year-end stories. Anything you've got on your list that I didn't cover? There are, of course, some stories that came out this week that are big stories, like the Microsoft Blogger scandal. I'll get to that a little bit later on. But I just want you to know right up front, Microsoft did not send me an Acer Ferrari laptop. Wait, where is my Acer? Hey, Microsoft. No, they didn't send me one. I am running Vista, though, happily, on a couple of computers, which I purchased with my own money. Thank you very much. In fact, I purchased Vista with my own money. You can get Vista, you know, if you're willing to spend $700 for it. Microsoft has a developer network, MSDN, and they offer a subscription to their software for anything from $700 to, I think, $15,000 a year. But if you subscribe to the operating systems, you can get the latest operating systems, even Vista now, for a mere $700. I had to do it. Have to be ready when you start calling with those Vista questions, right? We're 1 month out. Dave, Birmingham, Alabama, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Leo. I have a question about my Inspire laptop.
Okay.
It seems that whenever I, you know, you shut the lid and it hibernates.
Right.
And it has a wireless card built into it, but it seems like if I shut the lid and it hibernates and then I go to sleep or something and I come up the next morning and I open it up, it seems to lose the connection to the internet. And I have to restart the internet, and sometimes I even have to restart my router, unplug the router and plug it back in before it'll, you know, figure out that, oh, the internet's back, and it goes back on.
I actually have that happen with desktop with wired connections as well.
I've had it happen with my wired connection also, but not as frequently.
It's when you say hibernation, you mean hibernation where you actually it goes to sleep, right? It saves the memory to the hard drive. And when it wakes up, there's that little loading thing.
That's right.
Not sleep. There's two different ways, obviously, that a Windows machine can go to sleep. One is in a low power mode, but everything's still in RAM. RAM is being refreshed. Hibernation actually saves the RAM to the hard drive. It's an even lower power mode.
Whenever I shut the lid, maybe that is going to sleep. I don't know.
Well, there is an issue, a known issue with hibernation, and there is a fix for it. You can turn off wireless zero config, which is what I would do. That's a workaround, but Microsoft also offers a hot fix. Let me give you you can go to support.microsoft.com and you're looking for article 885-293. 885-293. And there's actually a little download that replaces a system driver. But the real fix, and this fixes a lot of wireless issues in general, is to go to the services menu in your system configuration utility. You know, when you right-click on My Computer, you select Manage, you get the console, the management console. Click Services, go down to the bottom, you'll see Wireless Zero Config. This is something Microsoft added to make it easier to get Wi-Fi set up, and in fact, it causes all sorts of issues. And double-click it and click Stop, Disable. But there's a full detailed fix, including a download, for this very exact problem on the Microsoft support page. 885-293. They do articles by numbers. 885-293. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 1129. Ginger Chan's in the KFI News Center.
Captain Dale Dye, tomorrow evening, 5 to 7 p.m., KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
1137, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. 1-800-520-1534. Mike's in Rancho Cucamonga. Hello, Mike. Welcome to KFI.
Good afternoon, Leo. Happy holidays.
Happy New Year.
Quick question for you. I have a Sony Vegas Studio 6 movie maker.
Excellent program, and, I think. They've done a good job with that.
Exactly. Yeah. I've made some great movies that I burned to DVD and for distribution to my friends and stuff. But now I want to compress these and put them up on YouTube or other places. And what I find out, I've got an AVI file or an MPG file that's like 3 million KBs or something. It's too big.
Yeah.
And I've looked online and a couple compression programs for, you know, $20 or so.
No, no, Vegas will do it for you. The issue on YouTube is the starting video has to be 100 megabytes. They recompress it and turn it into Flash anyway. But you can't have anything larger than 100 megabytes or 10 minutes, I think, to start. If you have a pro account, you might want to get a pro account. That's free, and that'll at least increase that limit to 100 megabytes. I think that's the limit. All you got to do is choose different parameters in Vegas. You got to tell it to compress it more. Now it's been a while since I've used it. In fact, I haven't used it since Sony acquired it, so I'm not sure what the menu item says, but there's undoubtedly an export or save as menu item that allows you to choose the format. Am I right?
Yeah, but the then, YouTube is asking for a MEG 4, but there's no MEG 4 selection.
MPEG 4 is not available. You might have to upgrade then to get MPEG 4 compatibility. YouTube won't accept an AVI file? I thought they would. I'd have to log into my account to see, but the point is once you choose the format, there will be an options button where you can then say, I want to make this smaller by either reducing the resolution, the screen size, which you probably should do. You don't want 640 by 480. You're going to put it on the internet anyway. It's going to be 320 by 160 or something like that, or 320 by 240. You also probably want to fewer frames a second, maybe. You might want to, you can specify in there, I want it to be a particular size. Yeah, that would be the best thing. Now, If none of that stuff is actually working for you, yes, the other way to do it is spend $30 on QuickTime Pro, which is Apple's program, works on Windows as well as Mac, apple.com/QuickTime, and then that has MPEG 4 support on it, and we'll give you that capability. You can actually say when you have to go into the options, you kind of have to dig into the dialog box, but you can say, look, I want it to be 100 megabytes. And it'll churn and churn and churn, but it'll make it 100 megabytes. It'll make it the maximum file size you're allowed on YouTube.
Okay. My son has an Apple. Could I download that file and do it in
you
his
do it
Apple?
On the yeah, or on Windows. Doesn't matter. It's cross-platform.
But I have to get the program, right?
Well, any program that's going to do MPEG-4 is going to cost you because they have to pay a license fee.
That's fine. Yeah. So QuickTime
Pro is probably
I can get that online?
Yep. Apple.com/QuickTime. It's $30 to upgrade to the pro version. So you get the free version, but you're going to want the pro version to export it as an MPEG-4. And the truth is there are other programs that'll do this, but really Apple kind of owns that MPEG H.264 space. I'd make a pro account on YouTube. It's free to do that. And I would look at what the limits are before you do this, because I think they certainly making a pro account, it increases the limits. I seem to remember, it's been a while, 10 minutes or 100 megabytes is your choice. I'll have to log into my account to actually see. They changed the limit recently. Andy San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Andy.
Yeah, I got a question for you. I got a Canon 5D, and I shoot the Canon RAW files, .cr2s,
yep.
And I save them from my compact flash card onto my Windows XP.
Yes.
And now I'm trying to delete the files. They won't delete. I get an error message saying they're used by another person or another program. And when I right-click the folder for the images and change the properties from read-only to take that away, it still doesn't work.
Yeah, you need Unlocker, man. Unlocker is a free program. I'll put the link in the show notes. It's kind of a long URL. If you just do a Google for Unlocker, that's probably the easiest way to find it. This is Dan Arcisop sent me this link actually the other day. There are a number of programs that'll do this. I used to recommend a program called Move On Boot that forces a reboot, but Unlocker actually does exactly this. It'll unlock the program. Something Windows thinks something's using it. This happens a lot with XP, and won't delete
okay.
it. Okay. How do you when you copy the files over? Are you doing it just by hand, or are you doing it in a program?
Well, I'm using DPP, which is a digital photo Canon.
That's the Canon program. Yeah.
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 Now, is this a function of my 5D that is saving the camera?
No. In fact, you know, it might be DPP that's not. It's something's not behaving properly.
Okay.
So, you know, another way to do it is just put the card reader in. You'll see the files. You'll see the folder. It looks like a hard drive. Drag the files over. Eject the compact flash. And see if the files are there. And then you can import them with DPP. I have a feeling what's happening is that DPP isn't that, you know, unfortunately, the software that comes with cameras generally is cruddy. The problem is if you want to work in RAW, you're kind of compelled to work with the programs that Nikon or Canon or Olympus offer because everybody's got a different RAW format. Do you use Do you use Photoshop?
I do after the fact once they're downloaded in.
So you don't really need DPP except to transfer the files?
Well, yeah, I can't. The other thing too, an additional question, if I may, is that I cannot look at the images
right.
unless I use DPP because
right.
they're, I guess, proprietary to.
Yeah,
Canon.
The problem with RAW. Here's what a RAW is. Just so people understand, you're using a still Canon camera, a very good still
yep.
camera, great digital camera. RAW is if you're serious about digital photography, the best way to do it. What it is essentially is a dump of the bits, bit for bit, that the sensor in the camera picked up. So you get every bit of information. If you use any other format, TIFF or JPEG, there's compression involved. You lose some information. Now, for day-to-day shooting, you know, I and many others use JPEG because it's okay. But when you want to have a serious photo or you think there might be issues with white balance or whatever in the photo and you know you're going to want to correct it, shooting RAW makes sense. It does require you to, you know, use another program now to read it and to modify it and so forth. So it's not great for snapshots. But if you're serious about your pictures, you shoot RAW. Unfortunately, every sensor, every CMOS or CCD has a different format. Every company does a different format. In the case of Nikon, every camera practically has a different Nikon RAW format. And so it's hard to keep up. Now, what you should do is make sure you've updated your RAW plugin for Photoshop because Adobe is constantly updating these. They'll have an update for your camera for sure. So you want to update your plugin. And in that, if you're using CS2, Photoshop
yeah.
CS2, yeah. Update your plugin, then Bridge will be able to see that RAW file, and you won't need the lame Canon program anymore.
All right, good enough.
Yeah, and that's probably the best way to go, you know, long term. So to recap, Unlocker, do a Google for Unlocker. I think it's the number one thing. It's a great, it's a French, a free French program that will allow you to disable or delete these files. I would see if you can replace the Canon program. I suspect that's the problem. Just manually copy the files to a folder and then use Adobe's Photoshop's Bridge to read it. In order to do that, because they're RAW files, you'll have to update the RAW plugin. And that there's a
okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, but I think it's just within Photoshop. It says update plugins. All right.
All righty. Good enough. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, shooting RAW is great. I'm going to recommend, by the way, my friend Mikkel Åland, Aaland. Has an excellent book on RAW that everybody on shooting, I think it's, well, is it called Shooting RAW? I think it might be. That if you're into digital photography and you're looking at shooting RAW, you need to kind of read this book because it'll talk about these issues in greater detail. Let me see if I can find it on Amazon. There are a number of, wait, don't search for RAW on the internet. That's a. I'll search for Aaland, Mikkel Åland, and I think it's. Yeah, Photoshop CS2 RAW using Adobe Camera Raw Bridge and Photoshop to get the most out of your digital camera. He's the guy I think who told me that you got to update the plugins. But Adobe's constantly doing this because cameras are constantly changing. Every time you get a new camera, it's got a new RAW file format. There is no standard. Adobe has proposed a standard, a bridge format, and it probably is prudent, the DNG format, the digital negative format, it's probably prudent once you get it into bridge to convert it to DNG, it'll make your file sizes double, twice as big. You need a lot of hard drive space because it saves the original RAW format and a DNG format, but then it's kind of universal. He talks about this all in the book. Photoshop CS2 RAW, A-A-L-A-N-D, Mikkel Oland. Spelled Oland, pronounced Oland. 1148, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
John Ziegler, evenings right after John and Ken, 7 to 10.
KFI, AM 640.
KFI, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. A caller suggested a photo mechanic for our last caller as a way of getting his pictures into Photoshop. Photo mechanic. It's from Camera Bits. I'm not sure what the URL is there. I guess it's camerabits.com. If you're already using Photoshop, I don't see any real advantage to something like this. It's really more for somebody who doesn't want to buy Photoshop, wants something simpler. It's an image browser. You know, I would take a look at, if you're a Mac user, Aperture, which is Apple's image kind of management utility. And if you're a Windows user, Lightroom from Adobe. But if you've already got Photoshop, I mean, Bridge is probably all you need. It's what, you know, most of the pros just use Bridge. Sandra, Los Angeles, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sandra.
Oh, hi. I've got a movie that I've made, and it's about the internet. I want to promote it on the internet.
Yay!
And I'm having a lot of questions about what to do on various sites. And, I want to post my trailers where they'll be seen, and
yes.
I found one place where they get seen, Uncut Video, which is from AOL, uncutvideo.com.
Mm-hmm.
I get, like, thousands of views there. On YouTube, I'll get, like, 20.
Yeah. Well, it's all about, you know, YouTube potentially, well, it has the largest audience, of course,
mm-hmm.
but it's all about getting people to know it. And the problem with YouTube is there's, somebody told me that I think there was 700,000 new videos a day posted to YouTube.
Yeah.
So you're one of almost a million other videos. It's, you know, it's...
Right.
Whereas now, on a smaller site like Uncut, you're not competing with as many people.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of places like this. I mean, YouTube's success has spawned, thousands of imitators. There's Rever is another very good one. One of the advantages
right.
of Rever is they share revenue with you, so
mm-hmm.
you can make some money on it. Google Video is another good one, but really ultimately promoting it is kind of down to you.
Yeah, now I'm also thinking about where to put articles about it. It's
do you have a website?
I do. It's called webcammurder.com, and that website is, that name is the name of the movie.
That's a good
and it's,
start.
And it's a really boring movie, which I think sets it apart from most movies.
Wait a minute. That's your pitch?
Yeah, and I've invented a whole genre for it. It's called Film Sleepy, movies that put the audience to sleep.
We can't believe we watched the whole thing. It's,
yeah.
You know, you're brilliant, Sandra. I think this is going to be huge.
I think so. It's just getting it out. But I want to ask
the
you
feel
about
sleepy,
some...
The Feel Sleepy movie of the year. Let me just play a little bit of it for people so they can... It's kind of hard to tell if 'cause you got to see the video.
Now that's the trailer, the main trailer.
This sounds like one of my podcasts.
Yeah.
This is very funny, Sandra.
Thank you.
So the trick is, you know, it's what you're really saying is, how do I make my video go viral?
Exactly. Now, one thing I was thinking about is Wikipedia. If I
you can't use it to promote stuff.
Yeah, see, if
you'll
I put
clobbered.
In, well, what Film Sleepy is, you know, something like that.
You're not supposed to do that. That's unfortunately,
what I thought.
Yeah. Wikipedia is for others to post about you, not you to post about yourself.
And then there are some other sites that I think are like that, too. Squidoo.
Squidoo's a good one. You can use Squidoo to do that.
I can do it for myself. And then what is delicio.us? How do you save that?
D-E-L dot, it's delicious. D-E-L
dot
I-C-I-O dot U-S. That's just a bookmarking site. You know, really, this is, you know, we're going to take a break for news. I'll tell you what, hang on. I think this is a good subject. How do you make a video go viral? We'll talk about when we come back. Because, you know, boy, that's, if you can, and this is funny. I mean, webcammurder.com. But how do you get millions of views on YouTube? How do you make it take off? Clearly, some people have grabbed the brass ring here. They people like Lonely Girl 15. It's made their career. It's made their successes. We'll talk about it. I'm not sure I have the magic solution, but I have some ideas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:59. Lisa Osborne is in the KFI News Center.
Saturday, December 30th.
It's 61 in Anaheim Hills. It's a 65 in Irvine, 62 in Santa Monica, 61 degrees in Burbank. KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks at 12:06. I'm Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
Super freaky.
12:07 on KFI. AM 640 more. Stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. Well, we are talking to Sandra about an issue that really I think a lot of people who create content or have websites or podcasts or radio shows or video would like to know more about, which is how to make something go viral. That's the brass ring. You know, you're trying to grasp that magic thing that happens with things like the Lazy Sunday video for NBC. That's why it was crazy for NBC's lawyers to sue YouTube saying, pull it down, pull it down. They had it in their hands and they said they didn't want it. Stupid. But you know, Sandra, that's the key. If you can be the number one video on YouTube for a week.
Oh, that's it.
That's it. You're done.
Made it.
And that's what everybody's going for. Now, of course, the problem is that's what everybody's going for. So it's a right. Noisy background noise. Now, you did a smart thing, which is you called a radio show with a decent audience.
Radio show
with a decent people. Audience. And you said, hey, webcammurder.com.
Right.
That's a good start.
That's the best thing I've done so far.
Well, and then the next step happened because somebody in our chat room went to dig.com, D-I-G-D.com, mm-hmm. and dug it. Now,
great.
This is an interesting technique. Now, Dig is just as hard in some ways as YouTube to make it to the top. But if you can mm-hmm. make it to the top, and the way Dig works is you sign up for an account and you can post. You can now, unlike Wikipedia, where mm-hmm. it's kind of not done to create a Wikipedia entry for yourself, the editors will immediately delete it. In fact, it's kind of even frowned upon to modify your own entry. So when there are mistakes on my biography entry, you know, you're really not supposed to mess with it. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to, you know, put a comment in or ask somebody else to change it or whatever, but you're not supposed to mess with it. The idea is it's independent of you, right? It's not a vehicle for promotion. But Dig is a vehicle for promotion.
Great.
Dig is the kind of site where if people like a story, they see it, they press a button, they dig it, and it moves up. And the stories that have the most digs go to the front page. And with it only takes a few hundred digs to get to the front page. A few thousand, you'll be one of the top stories of the week. And I've been dug several times, and it can drive quite a bit of traffic to your site. But that's just the beginning. You know, it all has to snowball.
Now, there's one thing that I did do that I think it is good to be on a lot of sites, and I found out that the Weekly World News, if you've had, like, contact with a space alien or something, they'll put it on their site.
They'll
so
do anything.
I sent them a video, and I said that space aliens re-edited my movie, and it used to be very exciting, and they made
now
it very
boring.
Dull.
And, so and did they publish it?
Yeah, it's there. Now, they made up some name for me. They called me Skitch. I don't know why. But anyway, they show me being invaded.
Now, what you should do is dig that, too. So go to dig.com. You have to have an account and create an entry for that as well.
Uh-huh.
What you're trying to do is it's ephemeral. You're trying to grasp. Sometimes people call this the attention economy, A-T-T-E-N-T-I-O-N, the attention of these notoriously fickle nerds. But if they get you and they like it, they will propel it. Now, is that mainstream success? Not necessarily. That's just the beginning. Mm-hmm. It snowballs from there, and you kind of every step of the way, you've got to continue to grasp people's attention. You've done some things right. You've got a funny. You started by great content, and I think that's obviously that's number one. It's got to be funny. It's got to or funny's good. I went to a lecture. It's part of Podcast Academy from the guy who created the French Maids podcasts, which are very successful. And this guy comes from a background, a Hollywood background of making commercials, making short films. He's really pretty well known in his trade and very knowledgeable. And he did a lecture on how to create a viral video. And one of the things he said, yeah, one of the things he said is the videos that really make it to the top of YouTube create emotions, whether it's laughter, sadness, excitement, anger. Anger's fine. And he said, if you can create two emotions, you're doing great. If you can create three, you're guaranteed. And he said, if you look at what videos really succeed on YouTube, and I think he's right in this, the ones that succeed the most are ones where they may scare you, make you laugh, and make you cry all at the same time. And that's really more traditional Hollywood storytelling, right?
And I think eventually it all gets back to Hollywood.
Of course it does.
To begin with.
Of course it does. And even before Hollywood, I mean, you could say Euripides got it right. It's always been the same. You have to have a story arc, a beginning, a middle, and end. You have to have an antagonist, a protagonist. You have to have conflict. You have to have emotions. That's true of everything. I mean, that those are eternal verities, and it doesn't change because it's on the internet. Now, some things do change. It's short, right? You don't.
No, my movie?
Yeah.
No, it's 85 minutes. That that was a trailer that you were looking at. And in fact, Uncut Video, I have 16 trailers right now, and I'm making more.
Excellent.
So, I mean, I'm just getting more and more. Oh, also, it's for sale on Amazon, and I reviewed it myself like everybody does.
Very
and I
good.
Gave it 2 stars.
Excellent. 2 stars. This is so
get
bad.
Out of 5.
I can't believe. Now, you're doing something that's very interesting intuitively. That also has been proven to work. I once talked to the guy who created, it's hard for me to talk about this website because the name is profane, but it was a website, Eft Company. It was a website that published company memos, people who, just these inane, stupid corporate memos, and employees would secretly post them to this site. It was great reading and did well for many years. How did he promote it? What he did is he went onto forums where people lurk that might be the kinds that would want to read this. And instead of saying, hi, my name's Pud, I've got a new website, you really should check it out, he said, he created a fake identity, and he said, this site is so reprehensible, so awful, these postings are so evil, this should be banned, this should be illegal, we've got to boycott this site. And of course, what happens? It drove huge amounts of traffic. So in a way, you're doing the same thing. That by saying these are boring videos, you're driving traffic.
Well, not a lot so far, but maybe you've helped me out
we'll
with
see.
That.
If we can get it, Doug, I'd like to hear from other people, other suggestions for going viral. You know, I mean, there isn't, if somebody who ever wrote a book saying how to make, 10 steps to viral video, don't buy it because there is no magic path.
But what about, now, Lonely Girl 15, was that driven by, it was supposedly registered, the name was registered to CAA
I'll tell you
agency?
This, yeah, I'll tell you the secret of Lonely Girl 15. And nope, not many people watched it at first. A few people did. It started with selling sex, a 15-year-old girl with her webcam. And so people started watching that, seeing if something was going to happen. What really made Lonely Girl 15 take off and become mainstream was the discovery that it was fake and the anger that stimulated among people who believed it.
So I was thinking, did they make it look fake or did they start the questioning themselves?
Possibly. Very interesting.
That's what I was thinking.
That would be a smart move. These guys are filmmakers. They've always said, and by the way, I don't know if they've made any money off of it. They've certainly gained notoriety. But
And her picture's all over.
She has done very well.
Yeah.
I mean, she's in Time Magazine, is one of the top movers. I mean, she has done very well. It's interesting. The filmmakers probably are doing well in the sense that Hollywood now knows they exist.
Mm-hmm.
And they have certainly created a new genre. I mean, the idea was these are short webcam videos. There weren't, but that was the premise. I think in a way you're right, because even you're a filmmaker, you understand. If you look at the very first Lonely Girl 15, the edits, There's no way a 15-year-old girl in her room with a webcam is doing those edits.
Exactly.
It was too professional. It was too polished.
Oh, yeah, and bringing in things from other times and all editing it all together, sure.
But now, if you look at they had a story arc. They had a great story, in fact. It was a very dramatic story. You started to get involved in this girl's life. You started getting an attachment to her. And then all of a sudden, her parents are... there's some weird, wacky religious cult, and there's a strange thing, and there's always this little hint of sex in there. Sex certainly sells, and now it's going to be hard on webcam murder, the feel sleepy movie of the year, to put much sex in there. So
right, yeah.
But this gets back to the original premise of this Hollywood filmmaker. You've got to have emotions. So what did Lonely Girl 15? It pulled every emotion. You identify with a character, you cared about them, all of a sudden you were scared for them. There was anger involved when you found out it was a hoax.
Right.
It was titillating.
That's when everybody knew about it.
That's when it broke out into the mainstream. Mm-hmm. And it takes all of those elements. And that's why and there is no magic path. I don't think anybody could sell you the step-by-step. The key is initially for you to get the initial attention and hope that the content you've created is good enough to start drawing eyeballs. And then you're going to have to be creative. It's guerrilla marketing in the purest form. You're going to have to be creative about how you get people.
But you kind of gave me an idea of, I don't have to be me saying, watch my movie. I can be somebody else.
I don't think that that's...
Like, it's not a good idea?
I don't think it's unethical. Because nobody's themselves on the internet.
You can be anybody.
Yeah. So I think that, I certainly don't think you should go on Wikipedia and create a phony entry. I think that is unethical. But going on message boards and forums saying this stuff, man, who's trying to sell this boring stuff? This is unbelievable. And she wants $9.95?
Well, you know, I started out $9.95, but then I was going to have a sale.
Now tell me, Sandra, are you in this business? Are you a filmmaker, or what is your?
Well, acting and stuff. But this is my first really being a filmmaker, and so it's really exciting to me. I spent 5 years editing this movie to be that boring.
See, what I love about this. This couldn't exist without the internet. You're not going to pitch this to NBC.
No, but nothing could exist without the internet. I mean, I couldn't sell it without the internet. I couldn't even get my 12,000 views of one of my videos that has a talking dog in it. You know, there's no talking dog in the movie, but he talked in the trailers.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Sandra, I wish you all the best. We've dug it. Go and dig it. Everybody go dig webcammurder.com. Maybe we can help you launch it. You know, the reason you can't say this is the step-by-step way to do it is you kind of use up, you know, you can't do what Lonely Girl 15 did again. That's been done. The hoax thing, that's been done. You're going to have to come up every time. You have to come up with a new angle. And in a way, the internet rewards freshness, surprise. Surprise is one of the most important emotions. Is that an emotion? But it's one of the most important things. That sense of surprise. Surprise can be humorous. You know, of course, that's the root of most humor is the surprise, the twist. It can be scary. It can be shocking. But what really surprise is novelty. It's newness. It's freshness. And that's ultimately, I think, the key to a viral video. Look at the Numa Numa guy. Here's a good example. This was a hugely successful video a couple of years ago. Just some fat kid in his room with a webcam lip syncing to a strange Romanian song. Remember that? Huge! Millions and millions and millions of views. One of the top videos on YouTube of all time. He comes back and does Numa Numa 2. There's a website. There's t-shirts. There's nothing. No surprise. No novelty. Who cares? Who cares? It was the freshness of the first one, the novelty of it, the kind of naive stupidity of it that grabbed people. You can't come back to that well. You got to do something new every time. That's a challenge. 1220, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
The sunny forecast and much more, Leo, coming up. KFI News Time, 1233.
You got high-speed internet yet? Whoa, if you do, and you're paying more than $12.95 a month, you're paying too much. And if you're still on dial-up, I gotta ask myself, why? Why? I ask you, why? It makes no sense. You want to participate in the YouTube revolution we've been talking about? You want to watch all the great content that's out there for free? You want to listen to the great music, read all the great blogs, have your email come in seconds instead of minutes, get rid of all the spam? You got to get DSL Extreme, high-speed internet for $12.95 a month. For the first year, for new customers, some restrictions apply, but you get anti-spam protection free, the modem free, 24-hour-a-day tech support from local guys free. No setup fees, no additional services. That's it, $12.95 a month. Call 866, the number 2, get net right now. 866, the number 2, G-E-T-N-E-T. You can also visit them online at dslextreme.com. 1-866, the number 2, get net to get high-speed internet for just $12.95 a month. Only from DSL Extreme.
It's Handel's World. He just lets us live here. Monday morning, 5 to 9.
KFI, AM 640.
1238. KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Valerie Glendale, welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Valerie, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you,
Thank you. What can I do to help you?
I don't know if this is a silly problem or if I'm trying to just install, it looks like a very simple program. It's called Save the Cat. It's a screenwriting kind of program.
All right.
And it keeps telling me I'm on a Mac, and every time I try and double-click and load it, it keeps telling me I have a fail to mount due to error 95, no mountable file systems.
All right. This software is Mac software, right?
Well, it's for both, actually.
Oh, okay.
But it has like a Mac, yeah.
And the file you're trying to open is a .dmg file? What is it?
Yeah, it's a .dmg file.
Right. And you just downloaded it recently?
Oh no! Well, I purchased it.
You purchased
actually.
It, purchased, so it's on a yeah. It's on a CD.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, all right. That's a little scary. All right. So, if you downloaded it, I would have said, "Well, it's probably a corrupt download. Try again."
Yeah.
Have you tried copying it from the CD to the hard drive and running it there?
Yeah, I mean, I tried it a couple ways. I tried just dragging the icon onto the desktop, and I tried putting it into the.
What a DMG is, a DMG file is basically a disk that can be mounted. So when you open it, it mounts up on your desktop, and you'll see a folder with files on it. And that's what the Mac is telling you with that error 95. It's saying, this isn't, there's no file system here. This isn't a disk I can mount. So the question is, you looked on there, and it says... that it is, you got the right operating system version and all of that.
I checked. I kind of went down the list and made sure I had enough, had enough RAM, had enough, it's only 10 megabyte.
And you haven't had this problem, before?
No, it's just, it's a weird, yeah, I mean, I have, it's doesn't look like a complex program.
Yeah. I'm looking at a post on this error, and there are a number of things that can cause this problem. One thing you could try doing is, there's a program called Mount.
Okay.
That's free. Mount.houchin.us.
I'm sorry, H-O-U?
If you just do a search for mount.app on Google, mount.app on Google, that should pull it up. Houchin.us. Now, this isn't for... What version of OS 10 do you have?
10.2.8. Uh-huh.
Yes, all right, good. This was a problem on 10.2. So,
because it's saying, version 10.2 or higher.
Yeah, you have a fairly old OS. It had this problem has been fixed in Panther and Tiger, but you're older than that, I think.
Yeah.
So you're at 10.2, which means you're two versions behind. Mount will help. I think this will do it for you. Because Apple, the Mac normally tries to launch the disk copy program, which does have kind of this known bug. Let me put a link to this.
Yeah, I was looking through that. Yeah, I was looking through disk copy trying to figure out if my preferences were wrong or...
Mount replaces disk copy.
Oh.
And you open it with Mount, and often that will fix the problem. There's also a program called DropDMG that will fix the file. That's from C Command. In other words, there are three or four different fixes for this. Apple even has a knowledge base article on this, this error 95. So it sounds like there's an incompatibility between the disk image that you've got and, and your operating system version.
Yeah. Now, I'm sorry, you said Mount...
Google Mount dot app app.
Oh, dot app. Okay.
Yeah. And that'll you can press I feel lucky because the very first result will be that program. If that doesn't do it, there's a free one also from C dash command called Drop DMG that also often works. That actually, what that does is modifies the DMG so it's compatible with 10.2 disk copy.
And I can just download these off the internet.
But what I'm going to do is put a link in the show notes. So go to leo.am, and there will be a link. Shubi will put it up for you. To an article that it's actually at macattorney.com. It's a very good article on that error, error 95. And he's got a... It's an article that says, how to deal with common Mac OS 10.2 Jaguar problems. And error 95, error 95, it was one of them.
Yeah, I've gotten it on other stuff, and somehow I've gotten past it, but I just couldn't get around it this time. I couldn't figure out what it was.
Upgrading to Tiger would fix it.
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, don't do that now, because Leopard's going to be out any day now, and you probably you probably will want to upgrade to Leopard.
Yeah.
You've already saved $250 by not upgrading the last two times.
Exactly.
Spend a little money. This will help you. You'll be glad. So are you a screenwriter?
I am.
Software really can make a difference.
It is. I guess specifically has gotten fairly well reviewed as far as just really making a solid, you know, out of all your brilliant ideas.
I'll have to look at it. I haven't seen that program. Most people I know use Final Draft, which is kind of the...
Well, it is Final. Yeah, I do use Final Draft. This is like a... It's almost like a pre-final draft. It's getting your outline and your log line and everything all together before you even attempt to write the script.
It's called Save the Cat.
Save the Cat.
And that comes from the notion of what? Saving?
Well, I guess I didn't understand until I got it. It's your hero, apparently, in your opening, within the first, you know, 5 or 10 pages, needs to either save a cat or endear himself to the audience. So that
Very
the audience
important.
Goes along with him wherever he goes.
That's the Lonely Girl 15 thing. You gotta
exactly.
win them over. They gotta care about you before they can.
Yep, and then they'll follow you anywhere.
Fascinating. Save
That's
the
what
cat.
It is.
All right.
Yes.
Let's put a link to Save the Cat in there. I know there is a book, but it's software as well?
There is a book. Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah, okay. I think the software just came out recently, it is a book as well, or
Very
it has
cool.
been a book for a while.
Yeah. Well, good luck with your screenwriting, and I think this will solve
your
problem.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Excellent. Thank you, Leo.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And don't forget to save a cat. So maybe that's what I've done wrong. I should save a cat at the beginning of every show, shouldn't I? Then I will be truly beloved. From Orlando, Florida, David, you're next. Welcome to KFI.
Hey, David.
Hey, David.
Hey, Leo. Thanks very much. I'm glad you could take my call.
Of course.
Hey, good. Hey, you know, I have a couple of simple things that I hope are simple, but I'm just glad that the girl called in about the movies because I have a business website I'm going to try and drive traffic to, and I think I might use some of those ideas.
Good.
But I've taken up home networking, and we've got two computers and an Xbox 360 that are all up and running, and everything seems to be great, except that I have an 11-year-old that we're going to turn our older computer over to. And, of course, he's not going to run as an administrator.
No.
And his system's going to be totally wiped clean and start from scratch when we start. However, on my brand new gateway, I've already shared the C drive on that computer, and I am trying to make sure that I can monitor his activities, but it won't let me peek into a user profile on the other computer. So I'm trying to figure out, how do I do that?
Well, let's see. That's an interesting question. If your administrator
On the main computer.
But you're going over the network to his computer.
Yes, and I want to keep an eye on him. Of course, it's right in the middle of the house where we keep an eye on him physically, but I also want to keep an eye on him virtually.
When you log in via file sharing to his computer, you'll log into not his account. Well, you could log into his account, which will give you access to all of his files.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah. So just when you do the log, when it asks you for a password and login, just use his login.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm seeing the C drive, but I'm not seeing his.
You're probably logging in as an administrator.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, but for permission to see his stuff, yeah, just log in as him.
I figured it would be something simple like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
it would be nice to be able to run as administrator and see those files, and I'm not sure what the best way to do that over a network would be. But anyway, there's a quick and easy way to do it.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. Now, secondly, and this is just for fun, the Xbox 360 is using the network, but it's not showing up as part of the network. Is that supposed to happen, or can it not show up as part of the network?
Yeah, there's
when you go into network, my network,
right.
Whatever.
Have you installed the Xbox support software on your PCs?
I've done a latest update that it asked for.
There's software that you have to put on it.
Okay.
That will, I believe, allow the Xbox to be visible. But you wouldn't be able to see the PC's content if you weren't running it. So you must be running.
No. I just want to, when I go into the main computer and I see,
you
my
see the Xbox,
places, I just want to see it show up. And
it's funny. I've never tried to do it in the opposite direction. I always do it from the Xbox.
Right, right.
I think you can. Let me ask. I don't know. Well, we'll find out for you. But you do have to have the Xbox support software running on all the PCs. That's a prerequisite. I don't know if you would see the Xbox. You might not. That's really that would be up to Microsoft and how it's configured the Xbox file sharing. If it has it turned that on or not, it doesn't have to make itself visible. In fact, there probably is good reason why it doesn't make itself visible. Come to think of it, because then you might be tempted to be a pirate or something. 12:48, 12 away from one. I'll find out for you. I think that's probably the case, that you cannot see the Xbox 360, but you can see the PCs from the Xbox. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's 12:48.
Matt Drudge, tomorrow night, 7 to 10 p.m. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Hey! KFI AM 640. Hey, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. I'm told by the chat room folks that, if you run the standard Xbox 360 on your PC, you should be able to see the Xbox 360 from the PC. I haven't tried it. I should really should try that. I have been downloading TV shows from Xbox Live. It's great. I mean, I like Studio 60, and now they got West Wing, and it's Aaron Sorkin fans are happy. It's $1.99 a show. But it's 480p, looks good on my high-def TV. The only complaint I have is I really don't like having the Xbox 360 next to the TV because it's loud. It whines. It's not a quiet box. I thought, this is going to be great. I'll have this great high-def gaming machine. It has an HD DVD player as an option. Be great accessory for my plasma, but it's noisy. Boo. I have to put it in a box or something. Gary and Colton, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Leo. I'm a big fan.
Thank you, sir. Happy New Year to you.
Oh, same to you. I need your advice. My ATI All-in-Wonder card died on my PC, and I have a Mac as well. And what I want to do is transfer some videotapes, to DVD.
Right.
But my question is one of those standalone home VCR, DVD burner things as good a quality?
Yes. It's exactly the same quality. And it does a very good job. It's certainly the easiest way to do it.
Okay.
What it lacks is, you can't, if you wanted to edit them and spiff them up and put a fancy menu on and all that stuff, you can't do that. You can put chapters in. You do control a little bit of it, but you can't do the fancy stuff. But
okay,
it's a fast way of getting all that video over.
Okay, I was wondering if the encoding was different.
Exactly
or
the same. It has to be MPEG too. So it's going to come out exactly the same. I mean, the weak link is your VHS video. That's the lowest quality. So as long as it's capturing the VHS video well, and it does, in fact, do a good job of that, you're going to get the same quality as you would on a computer. There are three ways to do this. One is, as you say, the standalone. And I think if you're doing a lot of tapes, that's by far the easiest. Next, of course, is to get use something like the All-in-Wonder or some other analog-to-digital converter to take the analog output of the VHS, convert it to your hard drive, and then use an authoring program to create a DVD. And the final way is to use a camcorder. Some camcorders have analog pass-through, where if you have a digital video camcorder and FireWire connected to your PC, you can use it as a converter. But I think I think you're actually on the right track. I think the easiest way to do it is the standalones. They're not expensive. Well, when you're done with the project, you actually have a nice DVD, you know, TiVo kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, see, my ATI card, I've had two of them now where the fan goes out on them.
Oh, boy.
And you can't buy a replacement fan. You can, you know. So I end up, finally I just bought another video card with more RAM.
Right.
And I was thinking of buying one of those external FireWire devices.
Yeah, those work. Those work. They're fine. They're more trouble because now you have to import it, edit it, and author a DVD instead of, you know, there's several more steps involved. But you have more control. That's the trade-off.
But then I could use my Mac. Would the Mac do a better job?
Nope. A DVD is a DVD. They're all MPEG 2. The like I said, the weak link is the VHS. But the quality of the DVD is going to be the video itself is going to be exactly the same. Might even be better if you didn't have a great capture device. It might even do a better job. So it really is a balance between having more control but taking more time and more effort, or you know, just being able to do it faster. And if you have a lot of tapes, I think a standalone DVD recorder is absolutely the best way to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, 1259. Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
Saturday, December 30th.
It's 62 in Fullerton, 61 in Laguna Beach, 59 in Marina Del Rey, 64 degrees in Pasadena. KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. It's 106. I'm Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
Thank you, Sunny Lisa Osborne. 106. Well, it's time for me, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. One more hour to go. The Dr. Dina Dale Show coming up. I'm here every Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 2. I forgot to mention, we do have a website that helps you find all the stuff I talk about. Because I know there's a lot of links and stuff, information flying by, and you're driving, and it's hard to write it down. And I understand. We don't want to cause any accidents here, so we have a website. Simple to get to. You go to the KFI site and you click my name, and it's the link on my page, official website, it says. That's KFIAM640.com. My name is Leo Laporte. Or you could just go to leo.am. That's kind of the short version. I tried to come up with the shortest possible URL. And that's six letters. I don't think you can get much shorter than that. I mean, there are a few. I guess United Airlines is UA.com. That's six letters. So, that's about as sure as Leo.am. And AM is kind of a weird one. I think it confuses people. Sometimes they go, well, you mean Leo.am.com? No, just Leo.am. AM is the country code for Armenia. So, you know, you can get a domain .us if you're in Canada, .ca, or if you're in Germany, .de, and so forth. And there are a few kind of interesting domains, like .tv, which is the island nation of Tuvalu, which is very tiny, but they were smart. They said, ooh, our country code is TV. I think we could use that. There's .fm, and there's .am. I don't think .am is that well known, but I thought, ooh, that's cool. AM radio, AM, got .am. So you actually have to go to the Armenian registry. I think it's $50. It's not very expensive. And I think probably more radio stations would use it, except that they realize that the most listeners are going to say, you mean .com, right? They're going to be confused by .am. But you're smart, because you're listening to this show. You know, I can say leo.am, and you'll know. This is Saturday's show 313. Wow. And links in there. Shuby's been really putting some links in there. I started the show with a look back at the big stories of 2006, and Shuby, you did it, man. You did it. You put in links to all of them. Wow. Plus to many of the programs and so forth we've been talking about. Web pages, help information, and so forth. leo.am, or just go to KFIAM640.com and click my name, Leo Laporte, under the show's listing. Tony, Manhattan Beach, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Tony.
Hello, Leo. How are you doing?
Thanks for hanging on. I'm doing great. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Hey, Leo. I'm new to Apple this year.
All right.
And I have a card reader that I have hooked up to a Mac Pro with a 10.4, you know, operating system.
Let me stop and you right there. Is it a SanDisk card reader?
No, it's kind of a generic one.
Because SanDisk like often has SanDisk often has trouble with Macs.
Oh, this one's like a multi, you know, card reader.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I made a mistake when I first got my computer. I didn't have the software I wanted to use to process raw, photo files.
Right.
And I made iPhoto the default one. So then when I loaded this newer software called Capture One.
Right.
Which, that's what most photographers use to process the pictures. It will, when I put a card in, it will open up iPhoto. It's not like a huge, it's a little bit of a
hassle. Let me tell you how to fix it.
Okay.
Easy to fix. Although not obvious. Most of the time, Apple does a pretty good job of making this stuff apparent. And you probably went to the system preferences to see if you could change that. And it's not anywhere.
Right.
The reason is this is handled by a program called Image Capture.
Oh, okay.
So what you have to do is change the Image Capture preferences. So it's in the Applications folder. I think it's in the Utilities folder under the Applications folder. It's called Image Capture. You go to the Preferences, and it says when a camera is connected, open, and then you can choose what you want it to open.
Oh, okay.
Don't.
Now, yeah, because I was like, I was going, man, if I was on a PC, I think I could figure this out.
Yeah. This is actually a very Microsoft-y thing that Apple's done here. They've really hidden it. And I don't know why they made it so non-obvious. The smart thing to do would be make a system preference pane that controlled the default applications. I mean, even Microsoft's figured that out finally. But Apple, for some reason, just hasn't figured that out.
Right.
In Microsoft, you would just change the auto run settings.
Okay.
You have to go to Image Capture, and that's the the secret.
But Capture One is like the
that's the one, huh?
As far as professional photographers go, that's the one. It's made by Phase One. They actually make digital backs.
Ah, so they would certainly be able to do that.
Yeah, and it will work with most cameras, and they update it all the time. But you can take care of all your processing here before you go into Photoshop.
You still use Photoshop, but this kind of gets it ready for Photoshop.
Yeah, but you could even make you could take your raw files and you could do like batch processing, so you could make 8-bit, 16-bit, and then whatever resolution and size you want, all one time.
Bridge will do that, of course, but I'll have to take a look at it. It's Phase One, PhaseOne.com.
Yeah, well, actually, the name of the it's called Capture One Pro.
Yep, and they have a free
made by Phase One
free trial, so you can try it. I would suggest Apple's really. At first, I kind of was less than impressed by Aperture.
Yeah,
but Apple has really upgraded. I would suggest a free trial of that as well. That's just try both of them and see which one you like better.
And with Aperture though, like one of the main problems was with a lot of people they don't have like the greatest graphics card maybe, and it was like creating problems.
Yeah, you need to have some hefty.
Why a lot of photographers kind of didn't really use.
Aperture. I understand, and it's taken a while for Aperture to gain traction. I think Apple's. At first, I thought Apple was not committed. They actually kind of moved the team off of the project and hired new people. But I think that actually they're very committed to it, and it's gotten better and better. So,
They send out. I went to there's like in LA. There's this digital imaging group, and I went to one of their meetings, and Apple sent out their project manager to kind of sell it.
They want to win you guys over big time. Yeah. But I will take a look at Phase One's Capture One, because that's I had not heard of that. And that's, you're a pro photographer?
Yeah.
What kind of pictures you do?
Fashion and lifestyle stuff.
Fun. How fun.
Yeah, the fun stuff.
Well, good, Tony. Yeah, simple, easy fix. I'm glad you called. I'm sorry to keep you on hold so long for something.
No problem. I went to the Apple store, and they kind of led me a different way. But I think I have a feeling the Leo way will work.
I think this will work for you.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, Tony. You. Take care.
Bye.
Eric, Agora Hills, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing, Leo? Thanks for taking my call.
I'm great, Eric. You're welcome.
I've recently upgraded to a Mac after using Windows 98 for years.
Congratulations. Any upgrade from Windows 98 would be a good one.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. There's a definite learning process right now.
I just read, although I was stunned. We were having a little argument last night on Twit, the podcast I do, about how many people are still using Windows 98, because this was the year that Microsoft said we're not going to support it anymore.
Right,
and depending on who you talk to, whether it's CNET or somebody else, it's between 50 and 70 million people still use Windows 98. I mean, that's
really
far more than use OS 10. Far more. So it's still, that's just the, and this is kind of in a way Microsoft's problem, is they can't get people off their duffs to buy a new version of Windows.
Yeah. Well, they lost one.
So you went the wrong way too. You went to OS 10. That's got to kill Bill Gates. So
yeah, a lot of it was on your suggestion, you know, and the stuff about spyware and things like that. So I'm happy so far.
Good. It is a little bit of a learning curve because it's just, you know, it's different. It's like being in the bizarro world.
Yeah.
You know, you click in the upper left-hand corner instead of the upper right-hand corner to close a window, things like that.
Right. Well, one of my issues right now is I don't have Microsoft Office. So people are always sending me documents and Excel and Word. And so I'm reluctant right now because they're coming out with the new Office 2007.
For Windows only.
Well, right. Well, the Mac version won't be available, let's say, for another year, right?
They're out of sync, unfortunately. So I don't know when the Mac version will come out, but it will be a while.
Well, I've been reading up on it, and it sounds like it'll be, I don't know, late summer in 07.
Well, that would be good. I tell you, Office 2007 is the first upgrade to Office that is probably worth getting in several versions. It's a really good version.
Well, so I'm kind of confused on what to do because, you know, I've heard you talk about running Windows.
Yeah, you could run Parallels. You could run Parallels and run Office 2007. Here's the issue. Office 2007, once again, has a new file format. And Microsoft, this XDoc format. Microsoft, unfortunately, has not made a viewer yet for OS 10. You can't read. If somebody uses Office 2007 and saves files without thinking about it, just in the native format, you won't be able to read it on a Mac. Now, that may change quickly because it really isn't out yet. You know, it's not out till January 30th. And by then, Microsoft may well have a plugin for Office on the Mac that makes it read those files.
Well, they've changed the you know, I don't really know the file formats or what they are. I think it's XML and
it's this new extended document format. Yeah.
So in 07, it's going to save it in a different way that it did previously in the last version.
You can still save in compatibility mode, but as you know, most people just use whatever the default is. So you'll be getting documents you can't read in all likelihood if you buy Office for the Mac.
So I'm just like right now, I don't know. I need to use something like Excel, and people are constantly sending me things in Excel, you know, business stuff. And what do I do? Do I go back and buy, you know, Office 2004?
Compatibility is your issue, and it sounds like it is, and I think probably you should use Parallels on your Mac. What kind of Mac did you get?
Just an iMac, just a 20-inch standard iMac.
And how much RAM do you have in it?
You know, I don't know. I've heard you, I think you said
you need two. Yeah, because you need a gigabyte for Windows and a gigabyte for OS 10. It'll run, but it'll just run very, very slowly if you don't have two. And I'll tell you, Vista, as I've recently learned, Vista wants even more memory. You can get away with a gig, but it's slow. It's faster with two. So memory becomes the issue when you're running two operating systems simultaneously. However, for maximum compatibility, until Microsoft releases a version of Office 2007 for Mac, I think that's how you're going to have to go. My recommendation is to buy this, if you can get the student edition, the student and teacher edition, that'll save you some money.
Don't I have to be a student, though?
Well, do you have a kid? Do you have a student in the family? You just need somebody somewhere who's taking classes.
That's a
good way to go. It saves you money, and you can actually install it on more computers. And
you know, there's a couple things. You know, I'm trying to stay faithful to the Mac and running everything. You know, it seems too easy to go start using Word and all these things.
Well, but it's hard to be faithful when Microsoft makes it a moving target, right?
So, yeah, exactly.
So I guess, you know, the other thing you can do, you don't have to buy Office at all if you can find a program that will read these extended document files. Nobody does yet. Spreadsheet's a little tougher. I have to say, though, I think probably, in all likelihood, most of the people who are working with spreadsheets are going to save it in a compatible format, because not everybody's going to have Office 2007 yet, even in the Windows world. So they're going to run into, compatibility issues with Office 2003.
And that's what they're saying. The stuff I've read about 07 is you need to save in two, you know.
So I think for a few months anyway, maybe even longer, it's going to be, people are going to be saving it in that old format anyway.
So if I did that, if I went ahead and ran, I mean, I've listened to your program. That's the only reason I'm aware of trying to run Windows in parallel.
Right.
Just I could go back and try to figure out how to do it. So now I'm going to have be faced with the challenge of trying to learn how to use Vista.
You can use XP. You don't have to run out and get a copy of Vista for this.
Well, should I though? Shouldn't I? I mean, I'd like to get the most current thing.
I think because of the memory demands of Vista, it might be prudent to stick with XP. That's not going to be a compatibility issue. The only compatibility issue is the document file format.
Okay, well, you know, since I only upgrade a computer every 5 years.
Yeah, you might be vying Vista.
Yeah, so you would recommend running Windows in parallel.
For maximum compatibility, given that people might be using this new document format, that's the only way you're going to be able to read it is by using Office 2007 with or without Vista. But Office 2007 in parallels on a Mac. And that'll solve the problem. It'll run fine. You will want more memory. You will want 2 gigs. You know, parallels is only $80. The big expense is Office. The other option is to buy Office for the Mac. And again, student teacher edition. It's fairly inexpensive. A couple $100. Less, actually. And you'll get it, you know, you'll be able to upgrade down the road to Office 2007 whenever it comes out for the Mac. I don't know if it'll be this year, but whenever it comes out from the Mac. And kind of hope that people are going to continue to use the old file formats, which I think they will for some time. Because, you know, is everybody going to suddenly buy Office 2007? No. There's lots of people using Office XP still. 2 versions back. And really, there hasn't been a reason to upgrade. I think Office 2007 is the first big, important upgrade to Office in quite some time. So people will eventually upgrade, but not right away. So the more affordable, economical, simplest thing to do is get Office for the Mac right now. And just make sure people, you know, pretend you're using Windows XP and Office 2003. Say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't read that. You don't have to tell them you're using a Mac. But for maximum compatibility, if you don't want to go back to them, say, I can't read that. If you want to make sure you can read it, you can use Parallels. Unfortunately, I don't know of any open source solution yet for something like OpenOffice for reading these Microsoft files. That's going to happen, though. That's going to happen quickly, I think. 122, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Hate that behind the eight ball Monday morning feeling? Stay in the loop all weekend long. More stimulating weekends.
KFI AM 640.
129, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I've done a little research, and yeah, there will be ways to open these new DocX files from Office 2007 on a Mac. Microsoft's promised a converter soon. Meanwhile, there are some programs like Panergy, the DocX converter from Panergy, that will do it. That's $20. So I'm going to revise my advice and say, go ahead, get Office 2004 on the Mac, and then just take advantage of one of these converters. There are quite a few converters. And OpenOffice, when it comes out in the next month, Novell says OpenOffice will support this format. So that's the free way to do it. If you can wait a few weeks till the next release of OpenOffice, at openoffice.org, that's a free Microsoft Office replacement, compatible replacement for Linux, Mac, Windows, and it will support, they say, the new DocX format. News is next. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll put all this in the show notes, by the way, leo.am. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Lisa Osborne is in the KFI News Center.
Hot, fresh, John and Ken. Now open weekends.
John and Ken, Saturdays starting at 3.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. That's my phone number, 1-800-520-1534. Just a few minutes left, and then it's Dr. Dean Edel of Fresh John and Ken coming up. at 3 this afternoon. I'll be back tomorrow to talk high tech, as always, Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's the New Year's Eve edition, so we'll talk about predictions for 2007. And a couple other stories like Microsoft, the Microsoft Bloggergate. I get that, you know, you can't blame Microsoft. Microsoft offered a bunch of well-known A-list bloggers a very high-end, very expensive laptop, the Acer Ferrari, beautiful bright red laptop running Windows Vista. The idea being, of course, that these guys would start to like Vista. Is it a bribe? No. They say it's a, quote, review unit, although they do say you can keep it and do anything you want with it, including giving, you know, having a contest and giving it to your readers. That's a little bit like a bribe. Normally, when Microsoft and others offer products for review, which is pretty common in the industry, the way they do it is by, you know, sending an agreement along saying you'll return this in a certain amount of time. And, you know, it's for review purposes. And there are usually some stipulations. For instance, I had a Zune. I didn't have to buy the Zune. They sent me a Zune. But they want it back. It's all packaged up to go back. After 3 weeks, I think, was a review period. Review periods can vary from a few days to a few months to sometimes longer. And there are open-ended reviews, but usually the companies want this stuff back. And frankly, as a journalist, usually I want to give it back. I don't want to have there be even any appearance of bribery or influence peddling. And from a practical point of view, I don't have any room for all this stuff. So I always send the stuff back. If I want something or I need it, I'll buy it. If I wanted a Zune, if I liked it well enough to keep, I'd buy one. However, you know, bloggers, most of them aren't truly journalists. They don't have the same ethical standards. Some of them disclosed it. In fact, that's how we know this happened. Some of the big names disclosed it, rightly doing the right thing. Some did not. Well, we don't know how many did not. We think some did not. So that's an interesting question, is how many didn't. Bloggergate, they're calling. What do you think? I think if you read blogs, you kind of know that there aren't the same journalistic standards. And if you're going to trust a reviewer, if you're going to trust somebody for your tech advice, you probably should look for some sort of explanation of what the policy is. And, you know, I really would look for, this has been a problem in the past for some statement about whether they take money from the companies they cover. That's really what you want to avoid particularly. And that's been a problem. There was a guy on the, I think it was the Today Show, who we found out later was, you know, being paid for, his appearances are being paid for by companies. And so he's giving them positive reviews. And worse, he was bad-mouthing the competition. And if it's not disclosed, you don't realize, well, he's doing that because they paid him to. That's not what you want. Let's go to Chattanooga, Ron, on KFI. Hello, Tennessee.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome to the
show. Long-time listener. Second time I've called.
All right. It's good to have you. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening.
Okay. I've got a little problem. Hopefully you can guide me in the right direction. I think I have some type of a virus on my computer. Every time I boot up, it within a matter of seconds or minutes, it says 90% of your resources are being used, and I have to go to Task Manager and delete a whole bunch of stuff that I'm not really running.
Huh. Are you running Windows 98? It sounds like you're running Windows 98. Are you?
Actually, Millennium.
Millennium. That's even worse. Okay. Yeah, because you wouldn't have this problem in XP. So the real question is this stuff that you've installed, or is it stuff bad guys have installed? And you don't recognize the names, but that you wouldn't necessarily, because they're always cryptic names in the task manager anyway. You have,
right.
I presume, you have a good antivirus, and you're keeping it up to date.
Yeah. And I'm looking for a better one.
Okay, what are you using now?
A friend of mine had recommended the Norman SoftStop. I don't know if you're familiar with that one or not.
Norton?
Yeah, not Norton, Norman.
Norman.
Norman SoftStop.
I'm not familiar with that one. And it's a little suspicious that Norman sounds so much like Norton. Let me see if I can do it.
If you look under Norton, it comes up.
Yeah.
It is apparently manufactured by Norman.
Interesting.
Or Norton.
Yeah. All right. Well, I would say one of the things you want to do right away is get a, I've never heard of this, is get a real antivirus, and you can get them for free. In fact, go to free, FREE.GRISOFT, greesoft.com, free.greesoft.com. Okay. You can download AVG, which is free, and you can at least download that and install it and check. That's the point of an antivirus. You know, it has two functions, really. One is to kind of try to block virus infections by watching what's going on, by scanning email. And the other is to, once infected, is to scan your system and see if it can find the virus and at least alert you to it, if not be able to remove it. Unfortunately, nowadays, viruses and even more so spyware have become so tenacious that many antiviruses and many viruses just can't be removed automatically. They'll either have to be done using extreme measures and surgery by hand, or better yet, just formatting the drive and starting over again. To give you that advice, but that's unfortunately the nature of security. Once your system is compromised to the degree that it's got a lot of junk on it, you can never be sure it's gone. I mean, they watch for antiviruses, for instance, and disable them. So you may not even be able to install AVG. The virus may see that you're trying to get it and stop you.
That's possible.
They're pretty nasty. Now, there's also online antivirus scans, and I would suggest that you go to HouseCall, which is housecall.antivirus.com. That doesn't require any installation. And that will at least give you an idea of if you've got something on there. housecall.antivirus.com. That's Trend Micro's online scanner. If they come up negative, then you probably don't have a virus. You may have spyware.
It's a recent occurrence. It just happened in the last month or so, and I've had this computer for a year and a half.
Yeah, but you know, first of all, Windows ME is kind of notoriously the worst version of Windows ever made. It has all sorts of memory issues, and it could well just be that it's not healthy. It may not be that it's infected. It may be just that it's not healthy.
Well, so. I may be upgrading to XP soon anyhow.
Yeah, well, I would just wait and upgrade to Vista, and when it comes out in a month, I mean, might as well skip XP. Why do I go to something 5 years? How old is the machine? It must be fairly old.
The machine I've got is probably about 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah, probably the best thing to do would get a new machine because the older machine's not going to run Vista very well and may not even run XP very well.
Okay.
So that's usually when people get a new operating system. They just buy it when they buy a new PC. I'm not saying you should buy a new PC, but I do think you'll find a much better user experience if you do.
One other quick question. Do you know if anybody manufactures a Cat 5 adapter with a male and two female so we can share one Cat 5 connection with two machines?
Oh, that's an interesting idea. Basically, that's a hub. Easiest way to do that is buy an inexpensive hub.
Okay.
You could wire it that way, but splitting it is not as good as hubbing it. So I would recommend just, you know, $15 you can buy a hub and you just use regular cables.
Okay.
It's a hub, you probably pay almost
that much for a splitter.
I don't think a splitter is really the way to go. Just you'll get more reliable results. I mean, you could do it. I don't see any reason why you couldn't do it, but you get better results with a hub, and they're cheap. It's just like the hub on a wagon wheel, you know. It's just a connection that you plug in. You can plug in, and the other advantage is you can add more later. And they're very inexpensive. 147, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
When the big stories break, we're on it. KFI News, Fox News.
153, 7 away from 2, KFI. AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI. Dr. Dean coming up in just a few minutes. A good choice, I probably should have brought this up, a very good choice, I think, for somebody like our last caller who has an older machine, 5 or 6 years old, running a really pretty out-of-date version of Windows, a version that is no longer supported by Microsoft, by the way. So even if he reinstalls ME and puts all the security he can on there, chances are very good he'll get hacked immediately or almost immediately because there are known holes in Windows 95, 98, and ME that Microsoft has said we're not going to fix. And we're no longer offering fixes. It's the only way they can get people to move to the new versions. is eventually just saying, you know, sorry, it's 6 years old, 7 years old. We're not going to support it anymore. You're on your own, dude. And in this day and age, with all the security flaws in Windows, on your own is not a good place to be. So somebody in the chat room suggested, and I think this is probably a very good idea. It's getting to be a better idea anyway. Looking at Linux, which is the free operating system that will run very well on that old hardware, will give you all the functionality of Windows minus the security flaws, is actively supported by a legion of programmers all over the world. It's probably a very good choice, especially if what you use your computer for mostly is, say, email, internet access, word processing, spreadsheets, that kind of thing. All of that's supported for free by Linux. Now, the Linux version I recommend for new users is Ubuntu, U-B-U-N-T-U, ubuntu.com is the website. They offer a free download. You can even get a disk sent to you for free. And you know, get your data off of that old computer and put Linux on there. It'll run great. I think we are finally ready to, you know, say that and tell people that's the way to go. Fred is at Fry's in Woodland Hills, hanging on the phone while the people look at him strangely. Hello, Fred.
How are you?
I'm great. Welcome to KFI.
Thank you very much. Quick question for you, because I know your show's closing. I'm upgrading from a 1.4 Athlon computer to a 64x2 4200 live. It's called the chip by Athlon.
Yep, very nice.
It's on a Gateway 5228 platform.
Okay.
Would the printer I have, the scanner I have, be compatible with the dual core 64?
Are they USB?
Yeah, they're USB.
Yep. Shouldn't be a problem. Now, you're not gonna, here's where you're going to run into problems if you run Windows 64 on that.
You want, I'm not sure what you mean.
Don't,
by
there's two
64.
Versions of Windows. There's a 64-bit and there's a 32-bit. And where you
well,
do...
Running, I apologize. I'm going to run my standard Windows
that's
XP
fine.
That I have.
Yeah, that's all. You, then you'll be fine. If it
but
works
computer,
with Windows XP now, it's going to work with Windows XP on that new platform. Absolutely.
Okay. So the platform it comes with is the... Media Center XP.
Yeah, it's just, the only difference is they put a few extra programs in there and they charge you some more. It's XP.
The main problem
comes with people say, I've got a 64-bit processor, I'm going to run Windows 64, and then what they find out is a lot of hardware doesn't work. But that's not your problem. You're going to run Windows Media Center. It's going to be a 32-bit version of Windows. It's going to run fine. That's a nice platform. You should
and
have
that'll
no
also,
trouble.
That'll also recognize Vista down the road, upgradable?
You bet.
Okay.
You bet.
I would
look for, when you're buying it, I would look for that, what they call the Vista Express upgrade coupon, and make sure you get that. It'll be fairly inexpensive.
Right.
Yep.
Right. It's part of the package.
Yep. Yep. Then you're going to get it, and in a month you'll get a disk, and you can install it, and you'll be happy.
I appreciate that very much.
Good.
Bill.
Enjoy the new computer, Fred.
Thank you kindly.
My pleasure. Yeah. The people get into trouble when they go to these 64-bit versions of these operating systems. Now, I am running a Vista 64 in one of my laptops just because I want to try it out. And it works, it's working pretty well. There are some programs it will not run. There are a lot of drivers it will not run. I can't use my Synaptics trackpad driver. There's no 64-bit version. But most everything else, my webcam works. There's a 64-bit version for that. So that's where you're going to get in trouble. Eventually, people probably will want to move to the 64-bit Windows platform, not because it's better. It's not. It's not faster. In fact, it might be slower. But it will be more secure. And that's really the only compelling reason to do it. I think almost everybody right now should be using unless for some reason you need a huge amount of RAM, 32-bit versions are fine. I am out of time. Dr. Dean is coming up next. I will be back tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. We will talk about my predictions for 2007. I'd love to hear yours too, our New Year's Eve edition. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1:59. Lisa Osborne is in the KFI News Center. Well, that's it for this edition of the Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/podcasts. KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.